It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 75 years ago, on August 6, 1945, the United States dropped an atomic bomb nicknamed Little Boy on Hiroshima, Japan. On August 9, 1945, the U.S. dropped another bomb nicknamed Fat Man on Nagasaki, Japan. The results were devastating. Between 129,000 and 226,000 people, most of whom were civilians, were killed. Just days later, on August 14, Japan surrendered and World War II was officially over. The United States won the race to develop operational nuclear weapons. The code name for the project that developed those weapons was the Manhattan Project, and scientists in Ames, Iowa, played a key role in making it possible. Leo Landis is museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. He's here to help us understand this history. Hello, Leo.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And take us back in time, of course, more than 75 years ago, the idea of an atomic bomb, a weapon that could devastate a huge area, that could replace warfare as we knew it, was coming into people's minds, and scientists all over the world were racing to be the first to master this force. Paint the picture for me a little bit.
Sure. And you referenced the term Manhattan Project, which people don't always connect to the history of the project. It came from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers office that was based in New York. And so that was the rationale for the term the Manhattan Project. But really, the big work is organized out of the University of Chicago to start. There had been work at Princeton and Columbia as well. But the idea was move it to a central location. University of Chicago had some premier scientists, and the scientist there, Arthur Compton, reached out to Frank Spedding, who was Iowa State chemist and chemical engineering professor. And Spedding had been working with different methods of working with compounds and rare earth materials, and so he became the lead on the chemistry of separating uranium to make it controlled. And Spedding, of course, spends his time. He joins the project. The project in Chicago is organized in late January of 1942, and Spedding joins at that time, spending half his time part of his time in Chicago and part of his time in Ames.
And people who have gone to Iowa State University or know quite a bit about Iowa State University know the name Ames Lab. And this was really one of the projects that put the Ames Lab on the map, right?
Exactly right. And because of Spedding's connection then, and he knows the scientists that he's been working with at Iowa State, the Ames Project is organized in February of 1942. And Harley Wilhelm, who was one of Spedding's associates, Wilhelm grew up in southwest Iowa down in Ringgold County. And so whereas Spedding had been born in Canada and raised in Ann Arbor for most of his life, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Wilhelm's an Iowa kid who goes to Drake and then Iowa State. And so between Spedding and Wilhelm, those are the two with the Ames Project, Spedding spending part of his time in Chicago, as we said, but Wilhelm really being based in Ames with the Ames Project at Iowa State and then Iowa State College to really create the uranium. And they create the uranium, about 2 tons of it, for the test that takes place later in 1942.
And that was a huge breakthrough to be able to purify that much uranium in large quantities so that you could run a reactor. As they were recruiting basically graduate students, some of the best and brightest young minds in Iowa, or at least affiliated with Iowa State University at the time, there was all of this secrecy surrounding the project, as you could imagine. What was that scene like?
And they did. They all had to sign agreements of secrecy. They couldn't reveal what project they were working on. And as you referenced, a number of these young men, they're primarily Iowans, but they're also a few Nebraskans and Illinois students who are at Iowa State. Apologies to your listeners, the sirens are going off in Des Moines. So
it's okay.
If you catch a little bit of that in the background, I apologize. But it really was a process where the scientists weren't allowed to discuss the project they were working on. And so the work in Ames and then later the work that starts taking place in Oak Ridge down, well, it then was called the Clinton Engineer Works, but today is Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Los Alamos, after Chicago's test in December of 42, they had actually started working on Los Alamos as a place, thinking maybe doing nuclear tests in a large urban area isn't a good idea. So Los Alamos becomes established as well. And then Hanford, Washington is part of that project. And so between those locations, but especially with uranium and at Iowa State with the Ames Project, that really is you know, a point of significance for Iowa State College and really the United States.
As they were recruiting these graduate students, of course, this was also a time of war, and these were fit young men who could be going off to fight in the war instead of working in a laboratory. They had to pull some strings to keep the scientists on board that they wanted to keep, right?
And even some scientists would do what they could to, you know, try to stay out of the regular Army. Not that they were trying to avoid service, but I think they recognized that the work that they could do as scientists working on the nuclear research was equally significant to the service that they could offer in another branch of service. And so the men really were focused on this work, and there were women as well working, especially at Los Alamos on the project, Clinton Engineering Works on the project. And so it was something that they were focused on, you know, trying to perfect the processes, keep it secret, and help the United States in its war effort.
Can you still see vestiges? I mean, I mentioned that this was one of the things that really put the Ames Lab on the map. It was just being developed at the time. Are there vestiges of the equipment, the laboratories that they used at Iowa State that are still there?
The main work, and that was part of Spedding's concern, was when he got to Chicago, he saw that there were really only two small labs for the chemists to work in. And so that was part of the argument he made, was we need more space. And so some of that work that took place in Iowa State campuses, some of those buildings that are still around, like Gilman Hall, where people were doing work. But today, the Ames Lab building, which is just north of Gilman Hall, just north of Parks Library, the current lab is much different, of course, and really significant. But places like Gilman Hall, where a lot of those chemists were trained, that's a place that once things are back to normal, I know Iowa State's trying to discourage people from visiting campus, if not banning them, but is an important building on the project too.
So as they were working through this process of purifying uranium in large amounts, as they had a major breakthrough, there was actually this incredible moment where Dr. Wilhelm personally delivered this 11-pound ingot of pure uranium to Chicago, and he took that in a carry-on on a train?
And that is the thing to consider. You know, we think about how travel is done. That 11-pound ingot up to that time was the largest pure piece of the distilled uranium that had ever been done. And so thinking of having something that, you know, is radioactive, you know, frightens us today, rightfully so. They knew that it was dangerous, but not fully, perhaps, to the extent that we know today. And so just taking it on a train car and being secretive about it was not out of the ordinary at the time.
Right. And of course, there were many steps between that 11-pound ingot and actually operational nuclear weapons. And as you mentioned, many other laboratories involved, including Los Alamos. Let's kind of skip to the end of this story. There is another significant Iowa connection with the dropping of the atomic bomb. The plane Enola Gay is actually, which of course was one of the planes that dropped this bomb in Japan, is actually named after an Iowan?
That's exactly right. Enola Gay Haggard was from Glidden, so Greene County, just west of Ames. And she marries a man named Tibbetts. And so her son, Paul Tibbetts, who was born in Quincy, Illinois, but really spent much of his life in Davenport and later Des Moines, is the pilot on the Enola Gay that drops the bomb on Hiroshima on August 6th. And so the pilot has a strong Iowa connection. Paul Tibbetts, and then his mother, Enola Gay Haggard Tibbetts, is who he named his plane after. And so Tibbetts and his crew are the ones that do that first flight, and so you've got that connection too.
There was so much secrecy surrounding this project and Iowa involvement in it after the war, after VJ Day, Victory in Japan Day. What was the reaction when this story started to come out?
It you know, when the bomb is dropped, and at least that first year, many people don't recognize the real devastation. There's just the relief of having the war come to an end. But really, Spedding and Wilhelm are hailed, as well as all the men of the Ames Lab and Ames Project, I should say. And so Spedding is giving an occasional speech around the state, and he's actually prescient in a number of ways, kind of foretelling things that become more accepted later in the 1950s and 1960s. He gives a speech in Sioux City in October of 1945, so just really a month and a few weeks after the formal surrender in September. And he talks about there's no way we're going to be able to keep the bomb secret, that Russia or the Soviet Union are going to have the bomb in 3 to 5 years, and that bears out. He also tries to assure his audience that, while these are devastating weapons, they aren't going to completely destroy the earth, at least from a destruction of property standpoint. The radiation poisoning, of course, would be brutal, and the explosion, the damage from the explosive would be devastating, but it wouldn't physically destroy the earth. And then he also foretells what is essentially the concept of mutually assured destruction, or what gets called MAD in the 1960s, and says that because of the capacity of the devastation of the bomb, that it really will be a deterrent. And so Spedding and Wilhelm are recognized. They're honored by the United States Army and Navy for their work, which was unusual for university. Usually it was just industry, and so they receive what's called the E Award, the Ames Project does. And really, Iowans are proud and should be still of the work going on at Iowa State and at Ames Lab today.
Of course, our view of history has shifted and is constantly shifting over time. And while this may have been viewed as a tremendous victory in the moment in 1945, and it did end World War II, there still are debates over whether it was necessary, whether it prevented further deaths, what would have happened if we did not do this. Why do you think it's important to explore this history now? And what do you think is important to keep in mind as we're looking at what happened?
We often look at history as inevitable, or what had to be. And I know, in talking to a father of a boyhood friend when I was in high school, who had been serving in Japan, those soldiers who knew what the slog had been like through the Pacific Islands really appreciated the fact that there didn't have to be any more battles like you saw through the Pacific Islands. And yet we know that Japan really was on the precipice of defeat, even with the bombing that had been taking place, of the standard bombing of Japan and Tokyo, and so that the United States and the Allies, but primarily the United States, really were showing Japan that defeat was inevitable, and whether the bomb was truly necessary, the bombs, I should say, were truly necessary or not, you could say, no, the war would have ended. It's important to understand that, but it's also, I think, difficult, and it was a civilian population that was attacked, so that's important to recall, that we weren't hitting military installations, though that had been the intent with the Nagasaki effort, was to hit a military site. So with those considerations, it's just, the history is always more complex, no matter what the topic is. It's not that, it helped us win the war. There was that devastating civilian impact on hundreds of thousands of people that you referenced at the beginning of the conversation.
Why do you think it's important to remember and preserve the history of what happened in Ames leading up to this?
Really, it takes the dedication and creativity of, you know, everyone on the war effort, whether it be women working at...
That was an exciting sound.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on. The power is now out at my home, but I'm on a landline that's not connected. So apologies again. But whether it be women in plants or, you know, African Americans working in factories, to understand the level of war effort that was taken and the work that was done at Ames Lab might have taken place at another location, but it really was, you know, brilliant scientists working, you know, 12, 14-hour days to create the uranium that's used for that first bomb, or the processes for that first bomb.
And are you having a major weather event in Des Moines right now? Is that what
we are? So at least at 3411 Kingman, it's getting pretty ugly outside.
All right. Well, Leo Landis, thank you so much for sharing this with us today. And where should people turn if they are looking for more information about this?
You know, there's a really great dissertation done in 1992 by Carolyn Payne that's on the Iowa State Parks Library site. So if you really want a really great review, I would credit her with doing some really good. She has her PhD in education from Iowa State, but that's available as a PDF on the Parks Library website. So Carolyn Stiltz Payne, I believe, is her name. She deserves credit for a lot of the references I was making. Also, the Iowa Biographical Dictionary has a nice entry on Frank Spedding as well.
All right. Well, Leo Landis, thank you so much, and please stay safe.
I will. Thank you.
Sure, we'll talk to you soon. Leo Landis is a museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. Of course, we were talking about the 75th anniversary of the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. Developing those weapons is something that scientists in Ames, Iowa, at the Ames Lab at Iowa State University, played an important role in. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Our production is done by Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese. You never need to miss an episode. You can listen to our podcasts anytime. I'm Charity Nebbe.